Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Game Industry News Podcast, the Gin Lounge. We're going by this week, Vinny and the Wombat.
Wombat.
I love the enthusiasm. This particular time, we're going to talk about psychology in gaming and how it affects how we interact with the medium. Though before we even get into that, I do believe that Neil has a disclosure to give.
I do. So just so everyone's aware, no one is taking us as experts. Neither Vincent nor myself have PhDs or MDs. We do not have degrees in psychology, nor are we medical professionals. This is merely our personal opinions, not those of Game Industry News. So please don't assume we're medical experts. We're just opining on some of the nuances of game psychology.
That is correct. All right. So with this particular topic, I believe you had a more clear direction of where you were wanting to go with it. So why don't you start us off?
So the things we deal with in the game industry now are kind of the norm, like loot boxes. I mean, if you went back in time and explained loot boxes to an N64 gamer, they just look at you and go, wait, you're paying extra money for what? So
that's just an expansion pack.
Exactly. And they charge you full price for it.
Memory cards.
So when you think about loot boxes, a lot of times you think of the fiscal aspect, but you don't necessarily think of the psychological aspect about people who have that compulsion to buy loot boxes. Because as Vincent and I spoke after our last show, you have the keeping up with the Jones effect. Well, my brother has the new season pass for Call of Duty. My two friends that I'm competing against that we always try to see who's a better gamer. They just bought all these new guns that are better than mine, so I need to buy the guns as well. So this is kind of what our podcast was about for this episode, is just understanding just what can drive gamers to do these things, because it's easy to sit down and go, oh, I would never spend $50 on DLC. People just have too much money, when there are other factors at play with these sort of purchases.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. And I think the largest issue is that all the way from developers to publishers and everyone in between, a metric ton of money has been spent on determining the best way that you can exploit addiction and get more spending out of whales or just whoever might be playing the game in general. One of these elements that I would consider, like, I wouldn't say like it's necessary listening or anything like that, but there is a video on YouTube called Let's Go Whaling. It's by the Tribe Flame CEO, Torolf Jernstrom, I believe. And in that video, the CEO mentions things such as not making the games too skill-based so they can best get extra money from gambling and shopping addicts by making the skill floor easily accessible by a large variety of players, and allowing them to acquire an edge if you pay a little bit extra on top. That is something he clearly states in the video.
Another thing to look at is from mobile games. A lot of free-to-play mobile games, they start you out free, they give you like a little taste, but then you hit a paywall or you hit a spot that's just so hard that you have to spend money to get new characters, upgrade your characters, get special boosts, get extra lives. But they bait you by the game being interesting, and the first hour to 2 hours you play, it's, oh, this isn't that bad. But then all of a sudden, next thing you know, it's less of a difficulty curve as it is a difficulty cliff. You run headfirst into it, and then the game's kind of shrug and go, well, you could fail, you could grind up for, 60 hours, or you could just pay $5.99 and all of your problems will go away. And it leaves the player with that choice of, well, I love this game, I want to keep playing that game, but do I have the time in my schedule, with my life, or just in general, to be able to put in all the hours and cross my fingers for a few good lucks with some of the daily loot box pulls to be able to enjoy this game? Or am I going to have to suck it up and spend the extra money just so I can enjoy the game the way it felt like it's supposed to?
Yeah, and that kind of psychological abuse that can be done by holding a property that you enjoy hostage is actually something that's been engineered toward. And it didn't explicitly start with mobile games, but they certainly popularized it, and now it's kind of seeped into more mainstream AAA titles. But I believe when it was just in the neighborhood of mobile games, they were calling it hook, habit, hobby. So you use some kind of alluring icebreaker to get players into the game, and then the game will have you checking back in every so often, or maybe even multiple times per day, normalizing it as a type of habit. And then when they finally get you into the hobby phase, they have you with such a big time investment that now you might be able to justify spending even more time and now monetary resources into the game itself. So I'm certain everyone who has ever had a cell phone has played at least one of those, here's your daily check-in bonus games, or come back in so many minutes in order to receive a new thing, or your structure will be made, or something. Because all of those freemium games do something of that nature. So they'll kind of hook you in with that, get you to spend your time, which then in turn makes you more willing to spend money. And they even codified it into a slogan, which I find to be equal parts interesting and reprehensible.
Yeah, and it's the other main factor they do is it was with properties that everyone's familiar with, like Star Wars. They say, well, we know here is the most popular character. Everyone loves this character. So we are purposely going to make it so difficult to get that it's essentially the equivalent of someone handing you a bunch of hiking gear and saying, now you could, you know, spend 35, 40 hours a week for however many weeks to become a certified mountaineer and then go climb Everest, or you could just pay us $10. We'll put you on a helicopter, fly you up to the top, and you can say you climbed Everest. There's a part of that brain, and we all do it. Like, it's not even an addiction thing. There's always that part of us that's just like, you know, it's only X amount of money, and it would save so much time. Like, it's kind of a good investment if you think about it. But then that's the problem is, the more, like, you start going down that rabbit hole of, well, it's only $2.99. Like, it's not that big of a deal. But then you get another mobile game. That one's, well, $3.99. It's like, well, okay, still not bad. But then with the way phones are, with memory getting larger, the amount of web-based games, like, well, what were some of them? Like Tribal Wars, Evony, just Clash of Nations, I think, is one of them. You start going, well, I'll just, $3 a month isn't that bad. But then, like, you realize you're getting a lot of progress. You're taking, you're growing so quickly, and you're becoming, like, the big fish in your server. So then you're like, well, I got to keep this up now. So, yeah, I mean, $7 a month isn't that bad. But then as things get harder and more people are on the server, you're like, well, I need to make sure I keep stronger. Now you're up to $15 a month. So it takes a game and turns into a subscription service, because it's all digital money. And I forget who did the study. I think it might have been Psychology Today did a study where people who had hard cash were less likely to spend it than people who had it on a credit card or a debit card. Because
that makes sense.
Yeah, when you see a stack of money, like, it kind of hits you, oh, I'm getting low on money, I probably shouldn't spend it. But you don't think about it when it's, you know, a bunch of debit card numbers on your PlayStation Plus account, or I'll just hop on the eStore and just buy this game, and it doesn't sink in until you get done. Oh, hell, I just spent $65 on Animal Crossing.
Or until you've opened up your electronic bank statement or something like that. Because, I mean, right now, who takes cash, right?
Right.
It's, I don't know. They have a lot of different elements that they use to try and hook people a little bit better. And a lot of it's toward just getting more money out of what they call whales. Because the goal is not to have everybody spend a little bit of money. It's to get a select few people to spend outrageous amounts of money. And if they don't wind up hooking you, then you're not the person with whom they're trying to execute this tactic. It's going to be like a friend, a relative, just someone around you who is more open to like gambling or shopping addiction. That's how they use elements like anchoring, where they'll have the player participate in a bunch of activities for whatever reason. Maybe it's like those community day things for Pokemon Go, because that builds a type of emotional attachment. It ingratiates the game with your own memory, which again makes you more likely to continue doing the recurrent spending models. If I recall correctly, in that video I mentioned earlier, the Let's Go Whaling one, they specifically mention something along the lines of offering you something at a low price to kind of make you go, oh, well, I couldn't possibly turn this down. Maybe they'll show you a package of really expensive items or something. It's like, oh, you get this many summons for $20. And when you first turn on the game, you go, that's too expensive. But then after playing for, you know, 3, 4, 5 days, they'll offer it to you for $5. And now they try to keep you in as some kind of like half-assed version of the sunk cost fallacy, where they'll get you to continually spend because you've already put some money in. Breaking past that first barrier is apparently what people in the industry consider to be the most important hurdle to get over.
And when you look at this, honestly, this has been going on longer than that in other industries. If you look at retail, both I think Amazon, Kohl's, and I think JCPenney all got slapped hard for this, where they would purposely mark something up just to cut the price down to MSRP and say, look, you saved X amount of money by buying it here, even though it's the full price. And eventually those companies got slapped with false advertising and were told to stop doing it. So the problem is, we as humans are hardwired, especially those who don't have a lot of disposable income, we are hardwired to never pass up a deal. That's why, like, you see people who do like buy one, get one free sales, which if you ever get a chance, Vox did a amazing piece on why a buy one, get one free deal is actually bad for you most of the time. Because like you get two of like this two shirts that you only wanted one shirt, but you ended up, instead of getting half off, you bought one shirt at full price and got an extra shirt that the exact same that you're not going to use. So you end up with extra clothes and you still paid full price. So whenever we get a chance to, well, hell, this is 60% off. Like, I'd be stupid to not take this. So it plays on our innate abilities of, because we all like getting a bargain. We all like, you know, going from one store to the next, finding the thing that we wanted for like $10 cheaper. And that's what they do. And as Vince said, it'll be full price, but then, or one of the other ways to do it is an introductory offer. Well, you only have your first 24 hours to get this at 70% off. So right there from the onset, like they put that ticking clock on you, which is like, okay, I have to make a decision now. And
yeah, that's actually very similar to the one that I just mentioned, just kind of the inverse property of it.
Yeah. And like, because like I'm usually not even susceptible to that. There was a mobile game I was playing and like it popped up and it offered like a $30 thing for $6. And it's like, you know, you only get your first 24 hours to do it. And I'm just like, because when you see that clock ticking down, your brain's just like, I got to make a decision. I got to make a decision. And like you start putting those constraints on yourself. And everyone who's had to make a quick decision on where to eat, what movie are we going to go watch, any sort of what game are we playing for game night? And you're like, well, quickly, you got to figure it out. Like when you feel that pressure of like a ticking clock, you're more likely to make a less thought out decision and more of an impulse decision. And nine times out of 10, your impulse is going to go very, very wrong.
That's actually something that was also brought up in that video, is they want you to constantly be making snap decisions just one after another. So that way you are more likely to put that money in. So I love that you came to that conclusion. And I don't even think, I think I forgot to send you that video. But I like that we came to the same conclusion of the information that was in the video anyway, just because of how obvious it was. But I don't know. All of these. Sorry.
Oh, no, no. You go ahead.
Okay. Well, like, we went over a few of these random principles, and there's obviously a lot more, because they have things like having multiple currencies or differing various elements, just so that way you can see the numbers go up like a handheld Skinner box. Or, I guess, actually, that's exactly how it functions, because that's a core mechanic of slot machines. They give you some flashing lights and throw you a bone every now and again. That way it keeps you occupied and keeps you sitting at whatever machine you're at longer before you know what you've even spent on said machine. All of these elements working in tandem kind of make you spend more money than intended.
So let me get this straight. Your hot take is that we as humans can be easily tricked by a series of flashing pretty lights and shiny objects.
Dude, that is exactly what I'm saying. Like, here, I will lay this straight out for you, all right?
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you. I just want to make sure that that's your hot take, that humans can't resist shiny objects.
Here's the hot take. If an indie developer from Finland was able to determine all of this to lay it out in, like, a 20-minute video that would be more adequately named monetization for sociopaths, then you can bet your ass that major AAA publishers have figured this out, too. In fact, you don't have to bet just your ass. You can bet my ass. You can bet all of our asses. Line them all up. Bet them all. And guess what? Now you've got a gambling problem, which makes you more susceptible to microtransaction Skinner box techniques. Good job, man.
You know, we have to blame Jeff Foxworthy for all this.
I would actually blame Jeff Foxworthy anyway, but I would like to hear the reason why.
So, one of his old comedy sketches way back in the day, he was joking around and he said the best way they get rednecks to buy bass boats is they put on a glitter finish. He's like, you ever seen a yacht with a glitter finish? Nope, but you give them a bass boat, put a shiny paint job on it, and all of a sudden the rednecks are just mesmerized and have to go buy a bass boat.
If you bought 14 battle passes for Fortnite, you might be a redneck.
Speaking of Fortnite, that actually gets me to one of my main points as a major contributor to this is actually esports. Because Vince, I hate dating us. I'm dating us every single podcast.
You Neil, and I'm not are dating both... you. I'm a married man.
Damn. But you, most of the people at Game Industry News, growing up, if we told our parents that we wanted to play video games for a living, they would have just went, uh-huh, that's nice, go outside. Because, like, that... people didn't win money for video games. Most you could do was, like, go to a GameStop or an EB Games at the time, you know, maybe play, like, a pre-release championship and get, like, a free, like, stuffed animal or something. But now, like, you have people winning hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars playing Fortnite, Call of Duty, PUBG, Overwatch. So playing video games has now become a legitimate career if you have the time and... well, the time, but what happens
and
now
the skill,
is...
and you're not playing Smash. If you're playing Smash, you're going to get like $300 and you're probably going to be called a pedophile. That seems to be how the Smash community works.
It's like a slice of Americana. But if you think about it, how much of a rationalization is it now that I have to invest X amount of money because, like, this is my job. This is, you know, my livelihood. I have to get these best weapons so that I can rank high and get on, like, with FaZe Clan or one of these other teams and be on a Call of Duty World Championship team. And all I got to do is make money. And I feel like video games now are turning into what poker is with stables, staking, where people can like pay for poker players to go in by taking a portion of the profit. So it's an interesting paradox, a dichotomy where video games have now essentially turned into Texas Hold'em poker.
I don't know too much about Texas Hold'em. The only river that I know is Song. And that's from Doctor Who. That was an awful joke. You know, we'll go with that one too. We will go with Firefly. So I understand what you're saying about Fortnite, Call of Duty, esports kind of contributing to a culture where people think they have to keep throwing money into a washing machine, essentially. I know that that is a little bit less in Fortnite because it's not necessary to like get the guns, but Fortnite does have, it does contribute to this problem just in a different field because it's more of an issue with the children who might look up to people like Ninja who might play with a very particular skin. You may have heard about the thing in 2019, 2020, where kids were like actually making social outcasts by calling other kids defaults because they weren't spending money to keep up with the Joneses, essentially, whenever like a new interesting skin would come out or something. I'm assuming you at least heard about that at some point.
I did. And actually, speaking of Fortnite, this is a hopefully one-time segment, but we are now doing the Game Journalism Hall of Shame because the, I'm not going to call it the journalist, but the gaming, online gaming magazine Dual Shockers, when showing off a Chun-Li cosplay, introduced her as Fortnite's Chun-Li. And like, I understand like a young YouTuber saying it. I understand, you know, maybe someone who's not a fighting game person and kind of on the younger side, but as a games magazine, a games journal, game website, you know better. This character's been out since 1987, so Dual Shockers, you are in our first and hopefully last games journalist hall of shame for this week. Bad.
Well, now I just discovered that Chun-Li is as old as I am and looks way, way better than I do. So that's pretty cool. Looks better than you do, too. I don't need to hear that crap from you.
Now, I was going to say, I feel like she has me beating her thighs, but I think I could take her everywhere else.
I'm just going to let that statement stew for a little bit. I think the only category we could beat her in is exquisite beards.
Yeah, that's kind of the truth of it. But yeah, like I said, Fortnite itself, like you pointed out, Fortnite is kind of more skins than it is actual performance. But their marketing campaign is second to none. They had an ad during the Super Bowl featuring Samuel L. Jackson and Pittsburgh Steelers receiver Juju Smith-Schuster. So like this, and this was during the Super Bowl, where it is millions of dollars for a 30-second slot. So their marketing campaign is probably the best I could see to help rake people in.
All I'm thinking about is how many times Samuel L. Jackson might have cursed while in that brief ad break. That's it. That's all I have to contribute to that. That
both too many times and not enough times at the exact same.
All right. It doesn't. I don't have a lot to work with off of that because everything that I would want to say would be like something that he said in the past. But as mentioned before, I mostly know him for the curses, and I don't think John would appreciate me just belting out a series of imaginative curses.
For those who do not know, John is the chief editor of Game Industry News and an avid listener to the podcast who likes to judge us and send us notes after every podcast. So yeah, we try not to let his memo of things we did wrong get too long.
Well, so long as he doesn't come after me with the soap to wash my mouth out again, I'll be fine.
Again?
Listen, sometimes I have things I don't really want to talk about with you. It happens.
Fair enough.
All right, were there any other particular examples that you think you might have regarding this subject? Because obviously, Fortnite's one of the largest ones, though everything about it is basically from peer pressure. It's like, oh, you need to spend money to keep up with your friends, to have all access to these weird skins, even though I don't understand what the benefit is of having all those skins if they just want you to use the same thing as all of your friends.
You know,
it's just me.
Now is not the time for logical questions, but you did hit on it earlier with the whole default culture of this is, again, something else that we didn't have to experience growing up. Most of the time for us, it was, well, hey, did you just get the new game? Did you get the new expansion pack? What we dealt with was stuff like the old Mortal Kombat game where you were trying to make blood appear on the, I think it was the Atari version or the Sega version. But we didn't have to worry about growing up someone going, oh, hey, you know, I just got Call of Duty World at War. Did you get the I Like to Kill Nazis DLC with the special zombie skin? No, we went out and we bought Call of Duty World at War, and that was the end of it. But now there's this culture where, like, it's keeping up with the Joneses, but at a middle school level, a high school level, and which is also a dangerous precedent because, as we've established earlier, generally people aren't. There are some people who just aren't great with money, and generally speaking, all minors are bad with money. Not because they're stupid or easily addicted to things. Those are myths. It's just minors are ignorant of, like, the value of money. Because think about when you were 17, if someone gave you $300, you thought you were the Monopoly man. But when you became an adult, someone gave you $300 and you're just like, oh, thanks. This will fix half of what my car has wrong with it. So with the minors having to grow up in the keeping up with the Joneses, having to keep buy to keep up with everyone, that from the beginning sets a bad habit that they will carry into adulthood and could have catastrophic ramifications down the line.
Yeah, that kind of conditioning with them trying to get you early. It'll be interesting to see what winds up happening later on, because there is legislation that's kind of, it's being pushed almost everywhere currently. It's having a lot more success in, like, Europe, Australia, places like that. But they're trying to make it to where you specifically can't use gambling mechanics in games with children, or specifically marketed toward children, because it's not exactly something that is good for you to be exposed to at a young age. And I've met plenty of, I guess, what you could call responsible young people, but there are certain things that you don't necessarily need to have normalized when you're young, and I hope I don't need to go any further into that than what I already did. So letting you discover these kind of things, like these companies are going to try and get excess money out of me everywhere that they can, it's probably better to find that out later on in life. Rather than it being one of the first things that you experience and have just made plain as day normal, something that you always wind up experiencing. Because, I mean, every company tried to get tons of money out of us as kids, too. Like, we can't really pretend that that did not happen. But I do think it warrants mentioning that should mechanics of this nature exist, like back when we were children, I probably would have a completely different outlook on them today. Like, currently, I wholeheartedly reject them, but I'm also old and I shake my fist at the sun, so who really knows what could have gone on in my head otherwise?
Yeah, and you actually brought up something else that I haven't harped on in a while, and I remember it drew a little bit of criticism from my friend group, at least, because I targeted Final Fantasy VII the remake, because one of the other things that I haven't seen until, like, fairly recently was corporate companies getting involved with video games. Most notably was Final Fantasy VII Remake had, oh, I can't remember if it was, I think it might have been Snickers or Dr. Pepper, where...
Oh, man, if you think that's the worst of it...
No, I didn't say it was the worst of it.
I have something for you also in a Final Fantasy game, but I'm going to let you finish.
So there was only a set amount of DLC, which, as Vincent has discussed ad nauseum, that it's forced scarcity because it's code. There's an infinite amount of code. They're just purposely putting a limit on to drive up its value. but there were certain DLCs you could get, and some of them only had a certain amount, but you had to buy like Dr. Pepper or Butterfingers or something like that. And I think it was like Butterfingers and Snickers or something like that, but you had to buy so many of them, put in the codes just to get the DLC, and most of it was just like extra outfits and things like that. And there are, and especially with Final Fantasy VII, that has such a fervent fan base. Like, not only is that bad by, you know, maybe people don't want to drink pop and eat candy bars because they're trying to be semi-healthy, but the fact that the DLC, you're not even paying the company directly. I think I did the math, and you would have had to go out and buy something in the neighborhood of like 38 Butterfingers to get everything. And quite frankly, who's going to eat 38 Butterfingers? I won't even eat one.
I apparently just completely passed by that quest. Then again, I guess I was trying to see whatever happened to Jesse. So maybe I just just slipped my mind.
No, because it was actually not in game. You never knew about it in game. It was a promotion that they mentioned, like on a website, that you had to go outside the game. You had to go buy Butterfingers or Cokes or whatever it was, redeem the codes on a website, and then it would go. The DLC would go into your game.
Gotcha. Okay. Sorry. Okay. So then, now that I know what the hell we're talking about, I can actually say something further on this. There is a straight up a cup noodle side quest in Final Fantasy 15. It was actually quite amusing, and that could be why they decided to do, I guess it wouldn't be an augmented reality game. I guess it wouldn't even really be a game at all. It's just, here, you bought a product, use the product's code to get more product.
Allow me to cut in real quick. We're going to cut back to Final Fantasy VII. Kai quickly brought it up. And this is per PlayStation Lifestyle. Ahead of the Final Fantasy VII remake launch, Square Enix ran a promotion with Butterfinger. Fans who purchased Butterfinger, Babe Ruth, or Crunch Bars were eligible for in-game content. However, only those who bought a minimum of 2 bars per purchase could qualify.
Oh, Lord. So that's like going back to the 360 days of DLC, isn't it?
More or less. And like that right there, like, really bothers me, because it could be done where it's just kind of hilarious. But for a game like that, when if you want to get the DLC, especially like the ones that only had like, I think there was only like 2,000 of like the top tier DLC. And you know how many people love Final Fantasy VII. Like, one, it's shameless. I find it shameless and disgusting. It's like, well, we can't sell our crappy candy bars. I know. Why don't we convince the Final Fantasy VII people to go buy them up in bulk so we can give them the candy bars from last year that we couldn't sell, and they get some free, they get some rare content that we could literally make infinite of, but we're not going to. And the fact that they did it where for scarcity, and the fact that it's the products, like it's candy bars. These things are extremely unhealthy. And it seems like a way to try to sell more candy bars when everyone's getting more health conscious.
Yeah, I definitely appreciated more when they did their product placement by making whole games. Do you remember Cool Spot and Pepsi Man?
Yep, and I still remember the Burger King game for a 360.
Oh yeah, Sneak King and the little kart racing one. There were actually a lot of games around like the Sneak King era where it was, oh, go buy a Mountain Dew, pop this cap off, type in a code, and you'll get like a battle pack in Battlefield, or whatever they called the Call of Duty packs, because they changed the names of those so many times, and I could not be bothered to keep any of those straight. But yeah, that was a pretty common one, though Final Fantasy VII Remake took it a lot further, and they made several of those things limited. Because if I recall correctly, those were over accessories. They weren't even like amazing items. It was just like bangles and stuff.
Yes. And I think it might have been my very first Skirmisher column. Like, I did some of the basic math, and like, if you found out about it just a little too late, you could literally go to the store, buy like 36 Butterfingers, come home, put all of the codes in and find out that all of them but the one that had no limit was gone. You bought 38 Butterfingers when you only needed two. So you just wasted a bunch of money and have a bunch of unhealthy snacks lying around. So then you either have to eat them or just take all that money that you just spent and literally throw it in the trash can.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only good thing to come out of that is that it was just exclusive for a brief period of time. Because I think sometime last year they just decided to make them free on the store. Though I didn't know that they were free until after I had already beaten the game. So it didn't matter for me at all, and I made my entire way through the game without this additional content of theirs at all. But I would definitely have appreciated there not being something that I missed out on arbitrarily. Because I'm one of those weirdos who still tries occasionally to 100% RPGs. Which is a horrible idea. I don't recommend you do that. It's just, it's sucking up a ton of time for no real benefit at all.
It may seem like a good idea, but take it from us. It really isn't.
It's just, you'll be sitting there to have some fun. You'll wake up an untold number of days later, just in your underwear, on the couch, wondering where everybody went. Your wife left you. She took the dog. You have nothing anymore. And it was all because of Atelier Ryza 2. Was it worth it? It's never worth it.
You know, and you actually hit on a good point, though, was when the
wife always takes the dog?
Yes, and occasionally the cat. It depends on if the cat's an asshole.
She would definitely leave the cat then.
Think about when the Xbox 360 came out and the PS3, when you came out with gamer score and trophies. Think about how many people, especially from a young age, that could have developed some sort of OCD, because some peer pressure could be there as well of, oh, so, you know, so that one person in your friend group was like, well, I 100%ed everything. And then, like, you know, they poke fun at you when you only get like 80% of the trophies because you're not spending 50 to 60 hours a month doing online multiplayer, trying to get X amount of kill streaks. But so you start seeing like the trophies of, well, I got 73% of trophies. Like I don't like that. I want to get 100. Or doing the one thing. There's one thing that a gamer score, a rally card game did. You know how gamer score on Xbox is always done in intervals of 5?
Something like that. Yeah, there were some that were like 1, 2, and 3 points.
This one was 6. And you had to like get X amount of cards to get 4 gamer score, so you get the even 10. But like I even found myself a few times when I was playing Far Cry 4 and 3 going out of my way to be like, yeah, you know, it might just take an extra hour or two. Like, why don't I just go pick up this trophy while I'm at it? And like, I never used to be that way. But now it's just like, I feel like, you know, if I don't get it, someone's going to judge me. Mostly you, but someone's going to judge me.
Okay, and I find it ridiculous that you say that, because I have never 100% at a game that I wasn't already, like, I haven't gotten all the trophies in a game I wasn't already going to 100%, which is why, like, if you look at my Xbox gamer tag, I think there is a grand total of 3 games that I got all of the achievements in. And for the most part, it was like Sonic Generations, and I think Afterburner Climax was one of them, and maybe Final Fantasy 13, which you can judge me for that one. That's acceptable.
I can't remember if I've ever 100%ed something. Granted, I don't have access to my gamer score from my Xbox 360 days when it red ringed and the hard drive broke and I wasn't ever connected to life, but I might have. But yeah, I don't know. I normally didn't care about gamer score, and I guess to a point, like, I still don't. Mostly like it was on Far Cry where it's like, oh, go pick up these couple collectibles. And it's just like, well, you know, I'm already
like
there.
Tales of Vesperia, where it's, oh, you have to defeat this boss in an insanely esoteric way. Like, get them all the way over to the edge of the arena, then bounce them up and over the lip of the arena, so that way they fall off. It doesn't even kill them. It just does a little bit of damage. But we want you to do this for 5 whole gamer score. I did not get all the achievements in Tales of Vesperia, despite playing that game fully through, like, a good 4 times. I think, like, acquiring every item and seeing every single, seeing all the cutscenes, getting all the titles that I can, which I don't even remember if there was a title attached to the same things the trophies were attached to. I think I was able to pseudo 100% that game without even touching the achievements or trophies or whatever in that one. But yeah, like I actually had a friend who was super addicted to achievement hunting. Like he was, for a brief period of time, one of the people in like the top 100 of all the people's gamer scores across the world. He wound up losing that when he went to, I believe, medical school for very obvious reasons. You don't put gaming over a potential career unless gaming is your career, in which case, again, don't make that career in Smash Brothers. He was very much into getting every achievement that he could. He even went out of his way to buy certain cheap games that basically just existed to let you get a quick, easy 1,000 gamer score. I never was really about that life, though if that's what you want to do, you can do that. And that hasn't really translated into a crazy obsessive, I'm going to spend a whole bunch of money in a game that would otherwise be free, or on guns for Call of Duty, or battle packs, or whatever. I don't believe it's translated into anything like that at all.
No, but it could have. And again, this is all speculation. Again, disclaimer, not doctors. Part of me wonders, like, if it did create a few more people with OCD who started doing this from a young age, and now they have to just get perfection. Because I know a lot of people who just, like, if they see it 80%, like, it just frustrates them. They have to go in and just spend more time because it just emotionally bothers them that it's not fully complete. So it makes me wonder how many people would affect it in that way.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because I'm just an insanely lazy gamer. In order to make me want to 100% a game, I need to really like it first, which is also why almost all the games that I try to 100% tend to be RPGs of some kind, just because that's what I typically gravitate toward.
But what Vinny is not telling you is, his step two is, the game also has to not be a bug fest. Cough, cough, Last Remnant, cough, cough.
That's always going to be like my white whale. I have that game on multiple platforms. I've just never returned to it after it screwed up twice. I can't justify spending all that time again, even if the remaster is better.
It'll be okay, Ahab. You will move past this.
It doesn't feel like it. Though, I guess we can't really say that every bit of psychology that goes into games is negative or just for the sole purpose of trying to get money out of the player. Because the more we understand how to interact with players through the medium, the more developers are able to, I guess, make more pleasant experiences for a lot of different people. Just about anyone who played early 90s Japanese RPGs probably thinks that a lot of games nowadays hold your hand a little bit more, or they'll have breadcrumbs, or they'll funnel you into different places, rather than just plopping you on an island and saying, okay, figure it out. Which, you ever played Hoshiwo Mirohito? You know what I'm talking about, and you probably died 6 times before you even found the first town, because they decided to make the town tile the exact same as a regular forest tile. You wouldn't even know it's there on a blind playthrough.
And one thing on that note that I want to point out is the ability to let people express themselves creatively. And for this, my examples would be Animal Crossing and Minecraft, where both of them, like, they're not DLC heavy. You don't need to buy a bunch of things. But like, a lot of people, especially Minecraft, have spent hours upon hours just building things, creating things, and it's allowed them to, you know, be happier, just feel like they're being productive. I feel like sometimes that's something that we as gamers, like, we get that issue where we just stop feeling like we're being productive and that we're just being lazy or energy efficient. But like, Minecraft allows people to have an outlet for creativity and feel like that they're not just gaming, like they're building their own story and fun. And you don't see that as much. I mean, yeah, you had games like we had growing up, like Roller Coaster Tycoon, Zoo Tycoon, SimCity, but none of those could get quite to the level of engagement that Animal Crossing and Minecraft are able, or Subnautica would be another one, to be able to do that crafting survival thing as well as those games.
Yeah, I think if you want crafting survival games, you pretty much just need to go to Steam and look up whatever's getting the highest ratings lately. They do have a wide variety of things that might come close to scratching that kind of itch. Like, I'm one of the huge proponents for Stardew Valley, because that is probably one of the best kind of Harvest Moon games to come out for a long while. Though, of course, that isn't to say that the Harvest Moon games that are coming out now are bad. The Story of Seasons games, at least, are still very entertaining. They have loads of things for you to do and to manage your time with. Like, they're very pleasant to play. And you get to see day after day after in-game day of your farm improving, your wallet increasing, all of these little items that you're collecting, how much your animals love you, how much the townspeople love you. It's a nice positive feedback loop that you can get yourself into. And there's no give the townsperson an item, and if you spend a dollar, you can give them another item immediately instead of having to wait until the next day. You know, there's none of that crazy Skinner box. Well, okay, it is a giant Skinner box, just it's a Rube Goldberg Skinner box that doesn't require you insert more than the initial coin.
Yeah, and I would like to bring up Animal Crossing as well, because Animal Crossing does a great job of, you don't have to binge it. Like, you can run around your island and you could do whatever you want to. But, like, it also, you know, allows you to put the game down, because, like, things take actual in-game, real-life days where you get something done. Like, that's great, but you have to come back tomorrow and it'll be built. So, I mean, that's like crack in a good way, because then you boot the game up, but it's not like you have to spend $3.99 to hurry things up. And the stores, like, you know, the stuff that rotates in every day, like, you can always catch certain fish and insects during certain months. The shops always change stock daily. So it's such an organic experience. And you, most of the stuff you can get in-game currency for by catching fish, catching bugs, selling the ones you don't need to donate to the museum. And, you know, you can build, like, you can rearrange your house, but you want to keep playing every day. You want to keep, well, it's I know a friend of mine, she said that she recently booted up the game and she was unemployed for a while, and she's like, because I recently picked it up and she was going to help me out a little bit, and she's like, oh, I've been playing this game for 720 hours. I was just like, wow.
Yeah, it's the Monster Hunter of debt. Though, from what I understand regarding Animal Crossing, they do the hook, habit, hobby thing. They do it effectively in the same way as what these freemium games do, but instead of having the end goal be that you pay more money, the end goal is that you continue playing the game for an extended period of time. It's like, spend a little bit of time each day for a while, that way you're easing into all of the various activities that you can do. That way they don't have you catching 17 tarantulas on day one and just be swimming in bells.
Yeah, and it's like the good version of, like, something bad, because it gets you to play more. But I know there is technically an end to Animal Crossing, but at the same time, like, for the most part, there's not really an end, because, you know, you go to your friend's island, you're always trying to beautify your island, always rearranging things, building new things. So it allows you to play the game and enjoy it, but, like, it doesn't necessarily put the stress on you that some of these other games do, which is why I think it's such a big hit, because you can have the, well, I need to get something done, but I don't have to pay back Tom Nook in one day. I can take my time, and if only mortgages work that way for millennials, but you can literally just take your time, just pay a little bit at a time, and just focus on other things. And I know that's really kind of relaxing to a lot of people, especially those who have anxiety. They can kind of just wander around the island. They can pull the weeds, they can clean things up, and it helps them feel better. And like these type of games didn't necessarily, like, they weren't as prevalent when we were younger. Like, if you tell me a game like that of creating things, like, my first two things come to mind was a Harvest Moon game I played on GameCube and Roller Coaster Tycoon. Those are my two go-tos. But now we have so many more options to choose from nowadays.
Oh yeah, it's a huge field. And probably the best thing about a lot of these games, especially Animal Crossing, they very rarely have a second form of monetization coupled in somewhere with it. I know that for Animal Crossing, I don't even think Animal Crossing has DLC, does it?
I am not entirely sure, to be honest.
Oh, well then. I know that Story of Seasons, Friends of Mineral Town, because I have to use the right name. I don't believe that game has any DLC, and it's just keep coming back day after day, making incremental progress, essentially using the same practices that other games companies would use, but just to let you play the game. It's kind of refreshing to get game in your game instead of it being effectively a slot machine where you keep sticking in coins, pulling the lever, and then very rarely getting that SSR ranked hero that you want so badly.
Come on, big money, big money, big money. No whammy, no whammy.
No wombats.
Always wombats.
Well, I think I've pretty much exhausted what I wanted to say.
I do not. I am thankful that you all have joined us again. Everyone who listens, we are really thankful for everything you guys do, and we'd love to hear more from you in comments. So, since Finny doesn't have anything, I don't have anything, we're going to sign off. We will see you next time.
Adios.